But once I got there, they wouldn't let me leave.
So what makes you think?
May I join you? Keith Stoner stood at their table, his bearded face serious, unsmiling. Holly looked up at him, more annoyed at the interruption than anything else.
Where'd you come from? She snapped.
Tavalera pushed his chair back and got to his feet. Holly, this is Keith Stoner, the Star Voyager. Dr. Stoner, Holly Lane. Stoner extended his hand to Holly. She touched it briefly, almost unwillingly. One of the robots placed a chair behind Stoner and held it while he sat down, then trundled away with the faintest whir of its electric motors. Before Stoner could speak a word, Holly complained,
"You claim there's going to be a nuclear war on Earth, and he..."
She pointed at Tavalera.
"He wants to rush back there."
"To help stop it from happening," Tavalera exclaimed. Holly shot him a bitterly unhappy look. Stoner said mildly, "It's a tough decision to make." She glared at him. "Miss Lane, may I call you Holly?" Stoner asked.
"Why not?"
"It's difficult for you to accept, I know," Stoner said. "You love Raoul, and you want him to be with you."
"He says he loves me," she muttered.
"And I do," Tavalera replied. "And he does," Stoner echoed. "But I'm afraid Raoul's gotten himself tangled in something bigger." Before Holly could respond, he went on, "The survival of the human race."
"We can survive here on this habitat just fine," Holly said. "Let those nutsos blast themselves down to quarks. We'll still be here."
"You can let 12 billion human beings die without lifting a finger to help save them?" She looked unflinchingly into Stoner's gray eyes.
"Nothing I can do about it."
"But perhaps there is something that Raoul can do."
"Like what?"
Stoner hiked his dark brows. "I've got to admit that I don't know yet, but I'd appreciate his help."
"You're both crazy."
"Maybe so," Tavalera said.
"But it's something I've got to do, Holly. Can't you understand that?"
"No."
Shaking his head ever so slightly, Stoner said, "I could quote you chapter and verse about how some men feel impelled to go out and face the dangers that they feel are threatening their homes, their families. It's like a genetic imperative."
"Raoul's home and family are right here," Holly snapped. "He doesn't have to go back Earthside. Let them blow themselves to hell."
"I can't," Tavalera said, almost pleading.
"I just can't, Holly."
Stoner looked at Holly through Tavalera's eyes and saw the root of the problem. Holly Lane was a newborn, a woman who had been preserved cryonically after being declared clinically dead of an inoperable cancer. After years of storage in a liquid nitrogen dewar at Cellini, she had at last been cured, her tumor eradicated by a team of lunar biomedical specialists using beams of antiprotons. But once her body was revived, she had no memories of her earlier life. A newborn in a young adult's body, Holly had to learn to speak, to walk, to take care of herself all over again. "She has no memories of Earth," Stoner realized. "It means nothing to her." But Tavalera was different. Tavalera had friends and family and a whole childhood of memories. Earth was his emotional home. With a sigh, Stoner said to them, "This is a decision you'll have to make for yourselves. All I can tell you is that I'd welcome your help, Raoul. There's a lot to be done back on Earth, and I could use all the help I can get."
"What do you plan to do?" Tavalera asked.
"I wish I knew," Stoner said almost wistfully. "I really wish I knew."
Kathy. Kathy spent several days in Cairo, visiting the Great Pyramids, walking the city's crowded streets, thronged with jostling crowds, and thinking about Mina. She's intelligent. She's had a decent education. She's got a good job. She could have a bright future ahead of her. Yet all she wants is to be married and have children. It didn't make sense to Kathy.
"It's their upbringing," her mother said in her mind. "Like their religion. They're trained from childhood, brainwashed into believing that's the way life should be."
"How can we change that?" Kathy asked silently as she strolled along a row of shops. The sidewalk was crowded and the sun felt oppressively hot despite the energy shell that protected her.
"You can't change it," Joe replied with some bitterness. "It would take generations to get them to see otherwise."
"I wonder," Kathy thought. "Besides," Joe added,
Your father doesn't want us to interfere with their way of life too much. He wants them to find the answers for themselves. But we could help them, couldn't we? At least a little bit, Kathy asked. Guide them along the way?
Her mother replied, It's a fine line between guidance and control.
Kathy walked into a covered arcade, out of the blazing sunlight. The crowds here were even thicker than out on the street. The shops were very upscale, posh, appealing to the tourist trade. The tourists were pushy, loud, and short-tempered from lugging their packages from store to store. On and on Kathy walked, beyond the arcade, past the rows of glittering shops and the bustling crowds of tourists. She kept to the shaded side of the street as much as she could, her mind still working on the problem of Mina. She's a microcosm of the world's population problem, Kathy thought. If an intelligent, educated woman can't see beyond having 6 or 7 babies, how will the world's population problem ever be solved? Not even her mother had an answer for her. Kathy realized that the temperature had become somewhat cooler. The sun had dipped below the skyline, she saw. Looking around, she realized that she had walked far from the city's thronged market district. The street she was on was quiet, almost empty. Evening shadows were stretching across the pavement. The buildings here were low, 2 and 3 stories, small shops already shuttered. Up ahead was an open area. It looked to her as if a building had been demolished and the site left to rubble-strewn weeds.
Behind you, Joe warned.
Kathy glanced over her shoulder to see a trio of young men in shabby t-shirts and baggy trousers ambling along the street, their eyes fixed on her.
I'll pull you out, her mother said. Not yet, said Kathy. I want to see what they want. They want you. Oh, mother, don't be so ancient.
Kathy kept on walking, but now she could hear the soft padding of their sneakers on the uneven pavement behind her. Then one of the men, boys really, whistled. Another one snickered. She kept to her steady walking pace, and within a few steps they pulled even with her.
"Hello, pretty," said one of them in heavily accented English.
They all had ragged beards and bad teeth. Kathy said nothing, kept walking.
"You American?"
Joe said, "I'm bringing you up." "Not yet."
"American girls, not virgins," said the one on her left. "American girls, all whores," the one on her right added, grinning widely.
Kathy could smell his breath, tobacco, and other things. The third one skipped a few paces ahead of her and flicked a knife out of his pants pocket.
"Come on, whore," he said.
Kathy glanced at the knife for an instant, and it suddenly began to glow white-hot. The young tough dropped it with a yowl of agony. The other two tried to grab her but screamed as electric shocks spasmed their bodies. Kathy looked at the three of them, writhing in pain.
"All right, Mom," she said mentally. "Now."
She disappeared like an electric light winking off, leaving the three would-be rapists staring, goggle-eyed. Back on the starship, Joe asked her daughter,
"You're all right?"
"I'm fine, Mom," Kathy replied, her expression utterly serious. "And I know what we have to do."
"Do you?"
"Yes. But Dad's going to hate it. A lot."
Chapter 2 Angelique had a plan. It was vague, but the more she thought about it, the more the details became clear to her. "Stoner fears our nuclear weapons," she thought. "He wants us to get rid of them. Very well. I'll invite him to witness their dismantling. An accident will happen. I doubt that even a Star Voyager could live through the megaton blast." That was the core of her plan, but she could see problems with it. How can we prevent the blast from killing others? After all, Stoner wouldn't be foolish enough to witness the dismantling by himself. There would have to be other people present, technicians, news anchors, perhaps even the Archbishop himself. That possibility shook her. Of course the Archbishop should be there. He would want to be there. He'd insist on being at the center of attention, showing the Star Voyager that the new morality was leading the way to a new world, free of nuclear weapons and the hellish threat of Armageddon. Sister Angelique turned the plan over in her mind, time and again, all through her long working.